Radio's coverage of AusCert's 2008 conference is sponsored by Microsoft. Visit itradio.com.au/AusCert08 for IT Radio's full coverage of this year's event and to hear Microsoft's AusCert presentations. Or go to itradio.com.au/security for the Risky Business podcast, honing your eardrums since February 2007.
Hello and welcome to this special edition of Risky Business from AusCert on the Gold Coast. I'm Patrick Gray. In this interview, Risky Business speaks to David Weisbrot from the Australian Law Reform Commission. The ALRC has been asked to conjure up new privacy law, so we thought we'd ask David what the latest with that is. Now, it looks almost certain that Australia will get mandatory data breach disclosure laws similar to those introduced in the USA. But as you'll hear, disclosure of data loss will only be mandatory if there's a serious risk the information will be misused. It's a different approach.
In January 2006, the government asked us to look at the framework for privacy protection in Australia and said, is it robust enough to withstand the advances that we've had in information and communications technology, international developments, changing social attitudes to privacy, and so on? And this is the second time the ALRC has had a look at this. In fact, our existing privacy laws are based on a report that was completed exactly 25 years ago. And that was considered groundbreaking. And in fact, the then chairman of the Law Reform Commission, Michael Kirby, went on to chair the OECD's working groups on privacy. So the ALRC's work basically set the Australia's position set the international benchmarks at that time. But at that time, none of the commissioners would have had a PC on their desk. None of them had a digital camera. It is way before surveillance, the internet, and so on. So things have changed so radically that the government said, have a look at the framework and tell us what we have to do to bring it into the current environment and try to future-proof it at least just a little bit.
Well, we had like a little stab at that back in, when was that, 2001, when there were some amendments made to the Privacy Act?
Yeah, that was not so much dealing with modern technology, but bringing the Privacy Act across to cover the private sector as well.
Because, yeah, it just extended the same protections that government departments had to follow. Two organisations turning over, what was it, $3 million a year?
That's right. By and large, yeah. I mean, unfortunately, in the way it was done, they introduced a new set of privacy principles. So one of the things we heard from everybody we spoke to, thousands and thousands over the several years, was that our law is way too complex. So in Australia, we have the Federal Privacy Act, but within it, it has information privacy principles for government agencies. And then, as you say, in 2001, we got the NPPs, the National Privacy Principles, governing the private sector. Then you have every state and territory with its own privacy law.
And New South Wales,
New South Wales and Victoria have health privacy laws. Yeah. So we heard from small business, big business, whatever, individuals saying, look, I want to be a good corporate citizen. I want to do the right thing. But what am I supposed to do? Which of these do I follow?
Well, I suppose it's interesting, too, because they seem like sound principles to follow. But the enforcement of the principles or the compliance seems almost non-existent. And that's, I suppose, why a lot of the rhetoric from my end, you know, being someone who covers a lot in information security, has focused around this idea of mandatory disclosure of data loss incidents. And that really seems to be the most contentious hot topic to do with this review, certainly from this part of the industry. Would you agree with that, that that's the biggest change?
It is a big change. I'm not sure it's the most contentious. Almost everything we discussed with people seemed to be contentious. Credit reporting certainly was highly contentious, and anything to do with children, of course, and you get an ambivalence across the whole sector, though. I mean, we often have people, you know, they pound the table and say, I have a right to privacy. But if you're offering them a free T-shirt, they'd probably fill out a form and give you all of their details.
Yeah.
And people were...
There's a few guys in the hallway doing that right now.
Exactly. All of those stalls out there are offering things, but, you know, in exchange, they'd like your email address and so on. So,
and a few drops of your blood.
Yeah, that's right. But we did a report on DNA testing not so long ago as well. Yeah, we definitely heard a lot of complaints about an ineffective regime. I think some of that is exaggerated. The Office of Privacy Commissioner has got a lot of new resources to handle complaints, but it is complaints-driven. And, of course, if you're unaware that your data has been compromised and you don't make a complaint. So part of our review, a good deal of our review is focused on the Office of the Privacy Commissioner itself, trying to improve their powers, trying to sharpen up what they do, to give them a greater range of sanctions that they can impose, and also to be able to go to court to have even greater sanctions in the really worst cases. We're also looking at some more private enforcement, and this is another one of the contentious areas, giving individuals a right to sue for a serious invasion of privacy. Not a run-of-the-mill kind of annoyance, but
not you, you left my credit card on a hard drive in the back of a taxi, more like.
Well, it depends. More like you're in the change room at Bondi and somebody takes a picture of you and puts it up on the internet.
And makes money out of it.
Whether or not they do, whether the idea is to make money or to cause severe embarrassment, that kind of circumstance. And so takedown notices are obviously ineffective on the web. You know, you're on a website based in Kazakhstan or something. Right. And we wanted to find some way to empower individuals. So we're playing around with that. Again, we're still fine-tuning some of these things.
I'm speaking to the president of the Australian Law Reform Commission, and he's saying, we're playing around with that one.
Yeah.
Just playing around with those laws.
None of these things come from the finger of God. You know, they're all done by human beings, and they're all you play with a lot of different models. Mm. And of course, the internet has made our research a lot easier and a lot harder at the same time, because you can go out now and find hundreds of different models for what you want to do, and thousands of academic articles or industry articles. And so, what we try to do is pick and choose among those and try to tailor something that seems to us to have the right balance between compliance and common sense, not to introduce a whole lot of law that will have the compliance burden really high.
But that was what I was going to ask. I mean, I suppose that's why we've been focusing so much on this, is because everyone's really worried about that compliance, you know, quote-unquote compliance burden.
Yeah.
But, you know, it does seem inevitable that the ALRC is going to recommend some form of disclosure regime. But from what I've read, it does seem that you're moving in a direction where it's not going to be quite based on the US models, where if some data leaks and it's inconsequential, there won't be any notification. It seems that the laws that we're likely to have recommended, something will have actually had to have happened with that data before mandatory disclosure is warranted. Is that correct, or is that just way too basic a reading of the rhetoric?
I think that's right. And again, we haven't released our final recommendations, but if you look at our discussion paper that came out last September and provided our basic thinking in this, and of course we've had many responses to that, and we're in the process of refining it. But we looked at the American, there's now 38 or 9 or 40 laws on data breach notification in the U.S. The OECD has released its model data breach notification provisions. It may still be draft, I'm not sure. But there are a lot of precedents out there, and we thought a lot of them required too much for too little gain. So as you say, some of them say, you know, any data breach loss or compromise, you must notify. And it's the last thing I want is, to receive daily notices from my credit card companies telling me that, you know, somebody wandered through their data center. We don't think they looked at yours, but, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So we've tried to develop something that would pitch it up a lot higher. Again, just trying to strike some common sense balance between saying what do people really want to know, when does it get serious enough. So we've been playing around with things like there has been an unauthorized acquisition of personal information, and there's a real risk of serious harm to affected individuals.
Don't you think there's a bit of trouble leaving that much wiggle room, though, for a corporate entity who doesn't want the bad PR, who doesn't want to notify people? Do you think leaving that little bit of wiggle room could be a little bit dangerous in that they're saying, well, we don't consider that there's a serious risk?
Well, there's a two-part, that's a good question, but there's a two-part consideration there. One is, of course, for the company itself, and the other is the privacy commissioner. So the privacy commissioner might say, well, no, I'm sorry, we think that's serious enough and you must do it. And the, of course, stick at the end is that if the company doesn't notify or tell the privacy commissioner or notify their customers, and it is found that they should have, then there are some pretty substantial penalties that will probably come into play.
So if you give, if you actually give it teeth, then people are more likely to be honest. I mean, I think that's...
Well, I think it would drag the people who have more trouble being honest into that. I think most companies will say, gee, we better do the right thing because that's our business. And if our customers don't trust us and, you know, it gets into the front page of the papers and we've lost our good reputation. So I think most will comply willingly. But in any industry, there are going to be people who are living a bit more on the edge or actually not intending to do the right thing. And so I think you need the big stick at the end of some of these to make sure that there's greater compliance.
Would you anticipate, and I've heard a few people predict this, I've actually been one of them, you know, I do a little bit of punditry in my spare time, but there's been a few people who've predicted that there will be a major public data loss disclosure after these laws are introduced. Just people seem to have the impression that stuff is getting swept under the carpet at the moment. Do you agree with that, or do you think that it's...
I think it must be happening. I mean, I don't have any specific instances in mind, but I think it must happen. I mean, we had in our own offices not long ago a break-in, first time ever, but somebody managed to evade all the security systems and broke in and was looking for laptops. And they didn't, I think the security must have disturbed them because nothing was really, we had a lot of damage, but no loss. But we were joking internally that if some of the laptops had been taken, we might have had to be the first agency to do a data breach notification. But it's got to happen. I mean, we read all the time about somebody leaving a laptop in the Qantas lounge or or medical records. That there's a big story in the paper the other day about a whole lot of medical records that were being transferred, I think, from one place to another, and they were just left out on the footpath.
That's excellent. Oh, that's right. I remember. Yeah right. That wasn't – well, there's a little bit of discussion about whether or not they were left on the footpath.
Oh, okay.
Perhaps
willfully –
Left on the footpath after someone gave them a brown bag full of money.
But, yeah, that's possible.
Yeah. Well, the tabloids love that because they always like to find out which celebrities have herpes.
George Clooney seems to have his hospital records in the newspaper everywhere he goes. He had a minor motorbike accident, I think, and the otherwise estimable UCLA Medical Center employees released some of his information to the media. So that sort
of
thing
happens. Did he fracture one of his oh-so-manly metacarpals?
I'm not sure.
Now, I understand you've also looked at the issue of data crossing borders, which, of course, in an age of outsourcing to, you know, South Asia is a really big issue.
Yeah, again, I think that's one of those areas that probably wasn't anticipated so much 25 years ago and is now just daily practice. We know that a lot of major corporations, banks, insurance companies and so on have their back office operations in Asia, all around Asia, and there's a regular flow of information there for processing, and sometimes those officers externally are able to access information within Australia. So, and we found a real interesting instinctive negative reaction to that in the Australian public. Almost every public forum, well, I think every public forum we had, somebody would get up and say, it just kills me that my information is going overseas.
But I do understand that the privacy laws in countries like India are actually quite robust because they've recognised it as a problem, a potential barrier to lucrative contracts. So they've actually paid a bit of attention to this stuff. Or is that just a... Have I got that wrong?
No, I think it's right. Because it's a big industry in Singapore, India, Malaysia, the Philippines, I think they are, whatever treatment they give to their own privacy information, however robust their practices are for local consumption, I think that they do make an enormous effort to try to protect the integrity of these kind of corporate IT operations. So there have been very few data breaches there. But nevertheless, we have to design a regime that's going to operate in a whole lot of places. I was part of the working group that looked at developing APEC laws, the APEC framework for the region. And the Australian government's been one of the leading players in trying to get some regional protection, regional regime there. And after I spoke, there was a professor from China who was one of the representatives from there, and he got up and said, well, it's interesting. He said, not only don't we have a privacy law in China, We don't even have a word for it. This is not a Confucian concept, where we share information with our family and our community as the norm. But, of course, they have to develop it to deal with the modern economy. And so we're looking at developing a regime that I think will give consumers much more assurance that their information is going to be handled overseas in the same manner as it is in Australia. And there are a number of different ways you can do that. And again, APEC is playing around with some of those. One is to have, as Europe does, to have some sort of regime that says that there's adequacy. So our government would look at the privacy laws and protections in another jurisdiction, say, yeah, those are the same as we would offer in Australia, and give it a big tick, and then you can feel relatively comfortable. The other is, and I think we're moving in this direction as well, is to say the company here or the entity in Australia that sends the information out should remain accountable. So they can't say the fact that the breach was in Bolivia or Paraguay or the Philippines means that it's not our problem. I mean, the customer's here. The customer wants to be able to deal with the local the local entity. And so we're trying to do that. And at the moment, the system operates a bit too much on consent in inverted commas, so that you operate with a bank and you probably sometime when you opened your account
tick the box,
you didn't read, that says that they can send your information wherever they like. And we're trying to get away from that idea of consent to say we need greater protection should be the default, and that consent might have to operate in certain occasions. Like I go into the bank and say, I want you to wire these details to another country. And they say, well, you know, the privacy protections there are not very good, and it's a notorious place for identity theft or credit card fraud. And I say, look, I understand that, but I need to get this money to family members there, so I'm willing to bear the risk. And that's a different thing. I mean, you don't expect the company to continue to bear responsibility when they've tried to warn you off. But we think in all other circumstances, you should have a much greater level of assurance about your information being sent overseas.
Okay, and you guys have already released a draft report, is that right?
Well, our discussion paper in September 07 is in effect a draft report, but of course we've had about 300 submissions in response to that, so it's been substantially fine-tuned, and the actual final report...
Substantially fine-tuned, that's a borderline oxymoron.
Is it? You can fine-tune a lot of things.
Yeah, it's like radically polished.
Yeah, okay. Well, it's been French polished.
Yeah.
So it's got a beautiful gleam on it now, and that beautiful gleaming object will go to the Attorney General next Friday.
Where they're going to hack away at it themselves, I'm sure.
Well, we have a pretty good record for our recommendations being followed, and again, because... we've been involved in the APEC process, and we've had a lot of advice from government departments along the way through, and also because this area has now moved into the Prime Minister's personal department, we think it'll get a high level of attention, and we hope some pretty good and quick reactions.
So when's the first chance our listeners are going to get to have a look at the draft? Well, not even the draft legislation, but perhaps the ALRC's report, because then... That's what the legislation gets drafted towards, isn't it?
Yeah. So. Well, we give it to the attorney next Friday, May 30th, and he has 15 sitting days in Parliament to table it. Because it'll be a whopper, it'll be several thousand pages and hundreds of recommendations, we expect that the government will probably take a month or 6 weeks or something like that to actually make it public. So we're talking sometime late June or July, I would guess.
Okay, a bit of light reading, huh?
Yeah. Well, we'll produce it in three volumes, so each one can be taken to bed with you on a different night.
Fantastic. David Weisbrot, thank you very much for your time.
My pleasure.